The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Whee! We're going down the roller coaster. It's Thursday, everybody, and the Dow is dropping, S&P's dropping. But listen, we came off the bottom, it looks like, on the Dow at 18,213. And when I'm looking at this right now, because I had to record earlier in the day because I'm doing a webinar tonight, my very first virtual workshop, hopefully you signed up for that. We have about 70 or 100 people, I don't know, coming tonight. It's 6 o'clock, so we're starting at 6 o'clock, which means if you're listening to the show, you're not on my webinar, which is completely fine. But you can always catch the show on Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock, which is the most popular time. But yep, here we go. So we're going to talk to Rod in just a few minutes to get his take on things. But the video that I sent out last week, and you can see it on Facebook if you'd like to go to Comprehensive Financial's website, or not website, the Facebook page, you can check out the last video and all 15 or 20 videos we put out since the mayhem started back in March, early March. All right, before we get to a little bit of news of the week, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's talk about Lance Lyke. How about that? And the Lyke Law Group. Give your family the peace of mind that comes with proper state planning. Call Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. KennyBlandAuctions.com as well. If they're your full plan, but they're your full, I can't get my words out today, folks. Sorry, I've got about 6 things going on. My phone's dinging me. This is why you don't want to record midday, because you have too much stuff going on. But go to KennyBlandAuctions.com and see what they have going on. And then new to the show is Steve's Roofing. So I don't know if this is an official read, but I was told to do it. If you're needing a new roof, do what I did, which is true. There's a Steve's Roofing sign in my yard. They got on my roof and like ripped it apart, put it back on. Were there at 7 in the morning, left at 10:30 at night, and they were out of there. The next morning, came back, cleaned up, and man, it was sweet. And then the price, I was like, that was incredible. So yeah, look them up online. They are all things residential roofing. They do sheet metal, they do metal roofs, they do gutters, gutter shield, all that kind of stuff. So yes, definitely Google them and use them because they are fantastic. All right, let's get to a couple of cool news items. You know, the market, as of last week, had gained 43% off of the low back on March 23rd. But remember the math of recovery. When it goes down 32%, it had to recover over 44% to get back to even. We'll talk to Hot Rod a little bit about that. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note got all the way down to 0.91. That's pretty incredible. That was back on June 5th. The oil prices finally bounced back up. Benchmark closed at $39.55 a barrel when we were talking about negative oil prices a month ago. Being careful, we saw Americans drop their spending by 13.6%. This is what we're laser focused on right now, because what is the consumer doing? I don't even care about all this other stuff going on. It's all about the consumer. When 70% of your GDP is based on us spending money, and if we're not spending it, that's a bad thing. So that's what we're laser focused on. Again, we'll talk to Rod more about that in a few minutes. And if you're looking at refinancing or buying, man, the 30-year fixed rate mortgage fell to 3.15% last Thursday. That's the lowest ever on record in U.S. history. I mean, it basically means if you're buying a home, you're paying just $413 a month in principal and interest for every $100,000 borrowed. That's cheap. Now, what does that mean for the renters out there? You may want to reevaluate this and talk to a mortgage lender, because if you have a credit score that's reasonably good, you can get into a home almost with no money down, the way the loans work now. And PMI, personal mortgage insurance, is pretty reasonable these days. So you may want to get out of the rut of renting, possibly. And that's coming from someone who owns property that is glad you're renting it. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll get back to Rod and see what the heck's going on in the markets. This is Your Money with David Hayes. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. Hot Rod's on the phone with me. Rod, when I opened the show today, I opened it with this. Whee! Like we're going down the roller coaster today. It's been a different week so far. I've looked back last week when we had multiple headwinds. We knew all of this, but the market rode a wave of optimism over economic recovery, and we're discouraged by signs that we had a few spikes, or encouraged, I should say. We were encouraged by signs that we really didn't see a spike in any kind of virus outbreaks. We had firming oil prices, positive global manufacturing data helped boost things last week, and the market continued to be led by the industrial sectors that were most battered back in the March decline. You and I have talked about this offline. And it kept going and going and going, and we even said Friday, you know what, this is probably a little bit overdone, a little bit too much too quick, and here we are with a reality check this week.
Yeah, most certainly. And what we've been saying for the last few weeks is it's really predominantly been driven by the economic reopening and that it was continuing to progress and progress well and smoothly. And then also, secondarily, in the medical community, positive developments there. Now, no negative developments have come out of the medical side. Matter of fact, one of the drug makers moved into a final phase 3 trial for a potential vaccine, so that's positive. But you did have this week the Fed throw a little bit of cold water on the enthusiasm of the reopening of the economy. And from the Fed's perspective, they didn't say anything that really wasn't known. They just kind of brought it to the forefront in saying that, hey, look, while the market appears as though it's having a V-shaped recovery, the economy is not going to, and that this is going to be a longer drawn out process on the economic recovery, and that there's going to be a good chunk of people who do not get recalled back to work that are currently laid off. Then you throw on top of that the fact in the reopening, you have now suddenly had spikes in certain states. So there is becoming a little bit of concern in that regard that, oh, is this going to slow down the positive effects that we had been seeing in reopening the economy up to this point? All of those things are important and most certainly should be paid attention to. But more than anything, they're a great excuse to take some profits.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's plenty of profits to be had out there. Early, we had said last week on glass, especially I addressed it, I think, on Friday, maybe even briefly mentioned it again on Monday, that as the base broadened in the rally, that's always a positive thing, meaning that early on it was the technology stocks that didn't have much of an impact from what was going on, and then the stay-at-home and work-at-home stocks that seemed to be carrying us. Well, that began to broaden out. That's a positive. The problem then crept in when the areas most hardest hit economically by the shutdown of the economy started to soar, even to the point that you had companies who had announced going into bankruptcy. Hertz is a perfect example, had already announced it. They tanked and went to 77 cents on their stock price. All of a sudden, when things broadened out and you started to see heavy, heavy investing and massive run-ups in the airlines, in the cruise companies, in the rental companies, then all of a sudden Hertz, who's already begun the process, goes from 77 cents to over $5. Now, there isn't 100% guarantee that a bankrupt stock goes away, but it's highly likely that it does. Usually when it's all said and done and some of the secured creditors get paid back a portion, understand that if they invested a dollar in a bond, they're probably not getting a dollar back. They're getting cents on that dollar back. But usually at the end of the process, the common shareholder before the bankruptcy reorg normally isn't the same common shareholder on the other side. They come out with a brand new tracking stock. So the rally started to really look kind of junky this week when you start looking at some of those stocks. I mean, some of the cruise lines, airlines, you're talking 70, 80, 100% plus in the matter of a couple of weeks. And their return to positive earnings and revenue growth is a long ways off because they're the ones most hardest hit by this.
Right, right. I was actually looking at some numbers, and you and I have talked about this last week, that as of Friday, the market bounced up 43.4% from the low back in late March, which basically got us back to even for the most part. And if you look at the NASDAQ, was hitting an all-time high of 10,000. I mean, you know, think of it this way, folks. Even with this sell-off today, this is about a 4-5% sell-off, and you know how things go. Tomorrow it'll probably, you know, bounce up some and maybe then go back down. You never know. I mean, Keith Klein and I were just talking before I came on about why does the news alerts come out on Channel 13 that says Dow's down 1,000, you know, 11 o'clock, because who really cares, right? It's the end of the day that matters. It's not halftime of the game. The score doesn't matter at halftime. It's the end of the game that counts. Market's no different, and we're not even talking about the end of today being the end of the game. We're talking about the end of your plan or the beginning of your retirement. I mean, that's the way you have to think. And going back to keeping money in safe, secure places that you're going to need to put the roof on your house, which I just put on. Steve's Roofing did a fantastic job this week, was in my bank account. It wasn't in stocks. Money that I'm going to want for retirement or long-term accumulation, that's in stock. So this gave us a fresh start to reevaluate your tolerance for risk. If you just went through something that you say, I never want to go through again, but you did what you're supposed to do, hang in there, then you need to reevaluate your risk and change your allocation. Even with this pullback, the Dow is at 18 and some change. It's still at 25 and some change. That's a pretty darn good recovery. So don't think if today is the day. The reason I'm kind of on this high horse for Hot Rod, I had a meeting this morning with someone who's very risk adverse, moving into retirement, brand new client. And by the time I got off the phone, he looked at the market. He's calling in a panic, you know. And I'm like, just calm down, you know, calm down. We're gonna be okay. But yeah, we definitely, you know, have to step back and assess your own personal risk tolerance, what the purpose of your money is. And this major rally that we've had, even with this pullback, gives people a fresh start, press the reset button, and reevaluate your situation. Do you agree with that?
Oh, most certainly. Those are great conversations to have, because we have far too many retail investors, some of them clients of ours and most certainly clients of other advisors around the state and around the country, that think the best way to minimize risk is to time the market. So they want to have an oversized equity exposure. They just don't want the downside that comes with that. Well, you can't do that. You may have an advisor or a portfolio manager managing a mutual fund if he has the freedom and flexibility. A lot of them may be trapped into a corner. They can only build 20% cash. But they may do it once for you, but it's pure luck if you time the market and you get out near a peak and you buy back in near a bottom. Far more what happens that we see is you sell somewhere near that bottom of the panic, and then you buy back in somewhere fairly close to the top. So you completely defeated the purpose of thinking that you can manage how much equity exposure you have during the good times versus the bad times as your risk tolerance profile, versus just setting an allocation that makes sense, that says, okay, hey, if the equity market drops 30, 35, 40% and my stocks go down, what portion of my overall allocation am I okay seeing that kind of a drop with? And if it's a 30%, then by golly, be 30% equity exposure. Don't be a 70% equity exposure and think that you're going to time getting out before that big 30, 35, 40% sell-off happens. It just doesn't happen consistently, even for the professionals, let alone the retail investor who may be out there doing it himself or helping the advisor guide the process of the investing. Pick that allocation that makes your stomach feel okay during the good and the bad times, because we have both in the market.
From widen your lens too, folks, for the last 12 months, from June 5th of 19 to June 4th of 2020, the S&P 500 was up 15.19%. Yes, up 15.19%. Widen your lens a little bit. Take some perspective. And last thing I'll leave you with, Rod, you mentioned management. I have told so many people that this is not the time to be a passive investor. And what I mean by that is, folks, when you buy an index, you're buying it all. You're buying the pretty ones and you're buying the ugly ones. There's never more an important time to be with someone who has their hands on the wheel, that's guiding you into areas you should be in and out of areas you should not be in. Just as Rod mentioned, the junk stocks. I mean, you know, how long is it going to be before airlines really, really start to make? I mean, they had a $25 billion bailout, and there's probably going to be more. When is it seriously going to be profitable in the hotel business or the entertainment business or sport? I mean, you know, all that stuff. So Rod, I know we've always kind of been on both sides. We need a little passive and a little active, but right now, man, I am more convicted than ever that you need to have some active management.
Yeah, most certainly. Like you said, more of our core satellite, which is the passive in the core and the active in the satellite side, that's a little bit more of the smaller accounts to where we don't have the ability to properly diversify with our internal management as well. So that's part of the reason we do it there. But yeah, we know we want to have that exposure at a low cost to the broad market, because we can't time the broad market. But you're most certainly dead on that we also want to enhance or potentially enhance the returns by having some active management that is very selective and says, look, I don't want to own all 500 stocks in the S&P 500, which technically I think is 503, but I don't want to own every one of them. I want to own the top 25 or the top 50 that I see moving forward has the best growth prospects for growing their revenue and growing their earnings and maintaining or even growing the margin as well. That's where you get your alpha. That's where you get your outperformance. So combining the two is a fine strategy, but only owning the core passive side simply because it's low cost also means you're getting exposure to certain companies that if you looked at those companies on an individual basis, you probably wouldn't want to own them. But guess what? In the broad index, you own it anyway.
That's right, Rand. Preaching to the choir. Thanks, Hot Rod. We'll talk to you in a bit.
Sounds good. Have a great show, David.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. But before we do, I want you to know the next segment is nothing that we've ever done before. So tune in. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's David Hayes, Your Money. All right, if I was sitting here today and I said, our next guest, his name is Caleb Keyes. He's from Indianapolis, graduated from the Kelley School of Business, traveled to China and taught, and he knows Mandarin fluently. And now he's in Indianapolis as a real estate developer and rehab person downtown. You'd think, wow, that's a pretty good story. But Caleb joins me now. Caleb, that's not really where the story begins, is it?
No, sir. That's not where it begins, but that's just about how it left off and where we're at today.
We're going to do this. They're going to do this show in English, no Mandarin today, so you're going to have to spare us that. So,
well, anyhow, this is, tell everybody hello. How's it going?
There you go. Good man. Caleb, you grew up in the hood. You went to Arsenal Tech High School. You played sports. You grew up in a much different situation than what you're trying to create now for your family and your new daughter, your cute baby daughter. Give people just a little bit of insight on where you came from and kind of where you are today. And then we want to back up and talk about the mindset of the people that have been in poverty and the importance of financial literacy. So there's a lot to cover, and we've got you for two segments. So just tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Okay, well, my name is Caleb Keyes. I grew up in the Indianapolis, Indiana area, near downtown, around the Martin Luther King area, in the hood, predominantly. And I went to IPS, which is the Indianapolis Public School System. And so I prayed and tribulated and triumphed through that actual stage in my life. I attended Northwest High School, when I then said, all right, I need to make a change if I want to go to college. So I stayed up into Northwest High School until my junior year, and one of our counselors that actually pushed kids to go to college heavy passed away. So then I knew that the school itself wasn't going to focus on pushing kids to go to college, and I told myself I wanted to attend IU. So my junior year high school, I attended the Junior Executive Institute at the Kelley School of Business. It was basically a feeder program where it brought kids all around the U.S. into here to compete in a case competition. And so that was my drive to know I wanted to go to IU, specifically the Kelley School of Business. After entering and winning that case competition, we then said, all right, cool, I'm going to make sure I get into the school. So while transitioning into my senior year, I said, okay, I need to make a change, but I do not want to go into a township school. I wanted to say that I made it out of Indianapolis public schools. Predominantly, I wanted to be a success story. Tell people, hey, you can come from here, but you can go to a place that you never thought. So I did that, made the change, attended Arsenal Technical High School, which was more similar like a township in the way that the teachers taught, better teachers, homework, more testing. And so that's the type of environment that I grew up in. I then later said, all right, I got into Arsenal Tech. I made straight A's for the first time, started learning how to take tests and stuff like that. And then I said, okay, once I graduate, I'm either going to IU or I'm not going to school. So I had to buckle down and actually gain the ability, because I knew I would be far behind going, not going to a township and competing with all these kids from around the world, not even just our country. And so I had some adversity to face, some battles that I had to overcome, but I didn't let that stop me. My senior year, I said, okay, I heard about a scholarship program, the group scholarship program that were for minority students. So I knew that I didn't have the best GPA inside of school. I had, 2.9 by the time I ended up finished. So I didn't take school very serious, because that was in where I grew up. It wasn't so fortunate that kids went to college, or your parents or the surrounding environment didn't say, hey, let's go to college. The surrounding environment was more hit the block. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of that turned the wheels and said, okay, if I can get into the scholarship program, I got a chance to actually get into the Kelly School of Business. And so they told me about all the criteria going into Kelly, and I said, man, I don't think I'm gonna be able to make it. You know, they said you had to have a 3.2 to 3.5 with all these extra, you know, credits and all these things. And these are the kids that I'm competing against. But a lot of the professors that were in the Junior Executive Institute saw me in the case competitions. And by us doing so well and triumphing, they put a red flag on my name. Basically saying, if this kid comes past our desk again, we need to make sure that he gets in. So I took the beginner classes, and I said, okay, I'm going to get in. So the scholarship program, they pushed us, they taught us even more. Because remind you, the public school system, they didn't give you the tools that you needed to go to college. You barely were tested. You barely had your utensils. You had your teachers even bringing materials and buying them out of their own paycheck in this public school system. So we weren't, you know, I didn't know Asset and Excel, you know, all I just knew was business overall. And what happened was the scholarship program taught us basically how to be a college student 6 weeks before actually the college semester started. So once I was able to go into this program, I learned so much about the campus, about people. But I said, I wanted to be a success story, right? So I have to be out of my comfort zone. So this whole program was minority. So you had to either have low income, be poverty, you had to have, you know, you had to be first generation college student. So these were these criteria.
And you checked all the boxes.
Checked all the boxes. And I knew that if they had a program like this for people of color, minorities, and people that were less fortunate, oh, this is the place I need to be. Because they actually care enough that they take these students in, knowing that they don't have the same equality, the same, you know, environment, and they help teach us. And so the group scholarship programs, tremendous shout out to them. They made me really who I am today. So once I got in there, I lived in the Kelly Living Learning Center in the McNutt. And so shout out to them, because they definitely, without living with those students, I wouldn't have been able to meet who I met, the knowledge that I know now. One of my good friends, who's a Caucasian white male, taught me the importance of a credit. You know, instead of having a shoebox full of money, he said, go get a safety deposit box. It's secure. So these are certain things that I learned being up in that area and being in the Kelly Living Learning Center. And so those things helped influence my actual education. So I would have to go. I knew I was behind. I knew I had a chip on my shoulder because I wanted to say I'm a success story, right? It's not going to come easy. So, Miss Cindy Stone, K201, if you're listening, thank you so much, was my professor. And Brad Miarty, if you're listening to, great professor at the Kelly School of Business, computer science type of division. And they helped me. I will have to go in, and I told them at the beginning of this class, I said, I am not good at all with technology. When I was growing up inside of our schools, we didn't have computers. We didn't have, you know, stuff to practice on. I don't know about Excel and Access. So I'm coming to you as a student telling you I'm not going to do good in this class, but you're not going to see nobody work harder than me in this class. You might be better than me and have better opportunities, but one thing about me is you will never outwork me. I don't care how my drive is unmatched. So this is what I'm telling Miss Cindy Stone, and she can attest to this. She literally came up first day of class and told me this. And I said, I will be in here every single night for tutoring. I will meet you at your house if I got to meet you at your house to learn how to get this material, to be better. And I don't care if I get a C in this class. Everybody knows that the Kelly School of Business, the K201 and A100, these two classes are your read-out classes. They want to see who has that drive, who has that determination, because the class is tremendously hard. People don't normally even get a B in the class. And people that are super smart, that have a C in the class, they're very fine with it. You know, so for me to come in there and not express this to my teachers, that also rung a alarm. Like, hey, if I'm not good at something, I'm aware of, you know. And so for me and the upbringing and where I am today, having that mindset helped change the thinking and the thought process of how I go about things. So I went to any teacher that I was having trouble, hey, I'm going to meet you in your office hours. And what a lot of kids struggle with is that they didn't want to put in the work. And I'm here today saying basically, hey, that's all I did. I just put in the work. I didn't let anything stop me. Everybody, hey, I sat in the T-zone, the front of the class. Roger Gildersleeve and the group scholarship program, he taught us about the T-zone. Sit in the front of the class because, you know what, your teacher's going to be more likely to help you when there's a borderline grade, when they saw you put in the work, when they saw you actually do it. So, you know, I think that's helped a lot, and that helped me get to where I am today, Dave.
I know Roger really well. He's a good man. He's helped a lot of people just like you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want Caleb to help everyone understand the mindset of these young kids in those areas of poverty and what they value most and how he anticipates how all of us need to jump in and try to change that mindset, which would then remove a lot of what we're seeing today with people rioting and people protesting. Because like Caleb will tell you that it's the mindset of that community that needs to change, and it's our biases that we need to change to make this all happen. Yep. We'll be right back. This is Your Money with David Hayes.
Okay.
All right, man, we're back. We got Caleb on the phone still with us. I got to know Caleb in an interesting way. Maybe we'll get to that in a few minutes. But Caleb, when you were growing up, you talked to me about the mindset of that community, whether it's black or white, but just the poverty mindset. Talk a little bit about that mindset.
Well, I think, Dave, the first thing that we have to understand is that our mindset, rather than the wealthiest mindset, it's a bit different when it comes to education, when it comes to valuing actual possession. So like shoes, cars, clothes. I would say this specifically in the black community, we have to do better in the mindset. Stop valuing clothes and shoes and things that don't really bring no value. You know, a lot of times, in our community specifically, we like to keep up with the Joneses. I got to show you that I'm looking good. even if I'm not really good in actual life, but the presentation, if my clothes are nice, if I drive a nice car, then I will be, this will be nice. You know, I'm looked at as a top tier person. But you can have all these things, but not even own a house. You don't own any land. And so that's the mindset that our community is trapped in. Specifically, it comes from the hip-hop industry and what we've been shown and what's been portrayed. A lot of times inside of our environment, we see that, oh, on this rap video, they got the nice cars, the big chains, and this is what they wear these shoes, and we got to look like them in order to be successful. But they don't understand that that's not really success. At the end of the day, looking like that is saying the opposite of success. That means you don't know the value of an asset versus a liability. All that stuff that you buy that isn't worth nothing, that doesn't bring you no value, if you can't even resell it, you know. For example, I'll give you a good example. Inside of the rap industry today, they put diamonds in these watches. Now, remind you, AT Patek and these Audemars and these Richard Mille's, these are $500,000 watches, $250,000 watches. And then what happens is, instead of them just keeping it the solid whatever, gold or rose or whatever, they put diamonds in it and it devalues the watch. And so that's just an example where we don't understand that if we want to be flashy, but if you just kept it regular, then it's worth more. Yeah. You know, so I think this is the problem that goes on and you also, in our community.
You also mentioned you grew up with the idea that you should never borrow money from anyone. And that, you know, it's like, how's a brother going to ever get a house without borrowing some money? You know, there's good debt and there's bad debt. And just you getting exposed to people that explain that to you, opened up your mind, allows you to understand it. You mentioned when you were in the fraternity with a bunch of your rich white friends that you realized that they'd climb out of bed, they looked like crap, their shoes were nasty, and they'd go to breakfast. And you're like,
oh, well,
yeah, they don't really, I mean, so just being around people, other people. And I've always said, never underestimate association and never underestimate mentorship. So talk to me about some of your mentors that you've had and how important it's been for people to, you know, unconditionally just jump in and want to help someone like you who has that drive. Because folks, people at their core want to help people, but they want to help people that want to help themselves. So talk about mentorship.
So for me, I've had, you know, transitioning from how I grew up, the only way that I made it was because I had great, outstanding mentors at each and every point in my life, whether it was from sports, whether it's from in the classroom, or whether it's from the Boys to Men or the leadership programs that I was involved with. A lot of times we don't realize how, you know, I came from a single mother household. So having that father figure that was my coach or that was my teacher or that was somebody that even took their time to come out and have words with us inside of the classroom in the community. So for me, one of the biggest parts for growing up was having Adele Means, one of my mentors who runs ROI Marketing. He was a tremendous mentor, especially for me going to China and learning Mandarin. He told me from sixth grade, hey, you need to learn Mandarin because if you're going to be in the business world, everything's made in China. If you learn the language, you can go over there and you can do so much. You can find all type of suppliers and you can be the key inside of a big business deal. So that was one big influence that was tremendous in my life. I had Chris Evans, who is the Hyatt resource manager down there in Miami now. He definitely took us out to eat and just saying, hey, you know, I'm here when you need me. I understand you ain't got no father and stuff like that, but I'm going to be here if you need me to take you somewhere, if you need me to bring you some food or any of those type of simple acts shows so much care. And so for me, that helped me so much for mentorship. And so going further inside of my life, I would say, you, Dave, when I met you at the bank, literally we called you before we transpired to any business. We would call you and just ask you for advice. And we value those type of things. But where the root of it is that I am able to trust a Caucasian and their opinion. You know, based off of me being in a white fraternity, I was able to differentiate, say, hey, not all white people are bad. But when I first got to college, I told myself I'm not going to involve myself in the black community. Because why? Because I am around them 24/7. I need to get out of my comfort zone. The group scholarship program, and I tell a lot of these kids that go into it now and the ones that I went into it with, you guys did not get out of your comfort zone. The reason why I am where I am once I left college and the reason I've been able to do these successful things, like go over there to China, was because I had Caucasian white friends that told me about the opportunities, that said, hey, you can go sign up for this and I'll be able to help you do this. And they taught me about credit. They taught me about saving. So you're not going to be able to change yourself if you don't change and get out of your comfort zone. They will teach you a lot about themselves. And so when I was like, okay, I'm going to do business, I'm going to be in the business field, I need to understand that everybody is equal and I need to learn how to do business the way that they do business. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm stuck in my same environment, I'm not going to make any money because you guys don't want to support somebody until they get successful. You see what I'm saying? Yep. So I had to understand and learn how to conversate, how to turn on the switch and turn it off, learning how to, dress accordingly. So how did I learn this? Being around them. How did I get here? Because they told me info that your fellow black person or your African American or somebody in poverty doesn't know. We're told about credit in the opposite way. I remember you were just saying that, you know, how are you going to buy a house and you don't want to loan people, you know, get money, loans for money. Mm-hmm. And I will tell you, I'm speaking for the African American community. We are taught that being in debt is bad. Because we don't know what is the difference between good debt and bad debt. All of our parents and stuff only had bad debt because they would spend money before they got it. Or they would spend money on a credit card and not have the money to pay it off. A credit card can be used to stretch money when you're working on a job or you're getting a two-week payment. Instead of borrowing money from X, Y, and Z, you can put it on your credit card. So we weren't taught this type of stuff, but mentors overall taught me how to be successful. Mentors overall influenced me in my decisions that I made. And that's why it's so important for these listeners to go back and give back to your community, because we can nip all of this stuff in the bud now. If we just say, let me take an hour out of my day and go into a community and see how I can change it. See if I can grab one or two kids and mentor them. It's going to be tough because of the way that their environment is. But don't blame them. Just try to help them and steer them to the right way. You know? So for me, that's the biggest thing.
That's awesome, man. Unfortunately, we have a time limit on this show, and I've got to let you go because I have like 3 minutes to get in two segments. But you know how I feel about you guys, and keep doing what you're doing, my man.
Yep, I love you so much, Dave, and appreciate everything that you've done and appreciate the time on the show.
All right, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll do.
Okay, bye. All right, guys, we got to take a break. This is Your Money with David Hayes. One kid, 1 hour every week. I love that so much. You know, I know we can fix this problem. But we have to immerse ourselves in his community as well. If you're in, so I'm going to tell you a real quick story. I got to take a break. I'm at the gas station Saturday, and Caleb and I have become good friends. And by the way, Caleb still had dreadlocks. I mean, he wears dreads around because he wants people to see that you can still look. He dresses great, but you can still have these dreads and still, and but yet be someone different. So I run. I come up on this large group of young black men on these motorcycles and at the gas station, and I said to myself, I'm not going to just pump my gas and leave with my head down. I'm going to engage these guys, and I did. And it was great. They were there for having fun, and they were down from Indianapolis trying to get away from the craziness. And it was kind of like, all right, you know, we had a great conversation. They were looking at my old truck. It was fun. So you have to go the other way, too. Caleb says immerse himself in the in that other area of different thinking, but I think we have to do the same thing. And I try to do that on a somewhat regular basis, and I encourage you to do the same. We're going to take a quick back break, come back, and wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Man, I'm going to have a new podcast at some point. We're putting a room together to do podcasts. I would have loved to have had a podcast with Caleb for 2 hours because there is so much more to that conversation than what you heard. But anyway, if it encourages you and inspires you, that's what I'm hoping to do. I'm always saying our motto is to inspire people to do the right things. And I just say fill in the blank after that. And naturally, we're in the money business, so it's to do the right things financially for themselves, their families, and their businesses. We will communicate, we'll educate, giving you confidence in our abilities to serve you. So think about that. Just look for a chance to get involved, not remove yourself. And you never know. I mean, I've got so many stories of my own, you know, growing up. And I told Caleb and Keith, those guys, I will never be able to advise you on what it feels like to be a young black kid trying to get into business. I have no idea. But we run through scenarios sometimes, like, okay, you guys walk in and you're asking for this from a banker. And then you have these guys walking in asking from a banker. Understand what that banker's biases might be for you. I mean, you just have to really, really think about stuff and not take offense to it. But as like I told him, look at it as a hurdle, just another hurdle in the many hurdles ahead. It's just another hurdle, and you can get over that hurdle. And when you do, then you can be that guy for your community. So anyway, that's it. We're going to have a great time. I'm next week, they're pinch hitting for me from the office because I have a fishing trip I'm going on. So have a great week, everyone. Goodbye.